This isn't just about horsepower.
It's about the culture behind the wheel.
From the latest automotive headlines,
to the machines we love, to the music, movies, and moments driving in the lifestyle.
This is Driveline with Justin Basic. If it's got an engine, an attitude, or a story worth telling, we're on it. Call in. Leave your take. 833-3DL-SHOW. This is Driveline. So let's strap in and let's roll.
I have to admit, since last week's episode, I've really been looking at BMW E60s. Don't even care if it's a V8. I'll put up with the oil leaks. Just want to feel that again. Driveline show. Sort of car show. Sort of everything else I like. At driveline.show. 833-3DL-SHOW to make your voice heard. That's 833-335-7469. Last few weeks, it's really been a Train and Disney show. I did finally pay a visit to Ward Kimball's house this past weekend, just to get a look before it may be gone forever. I also did another first, and that was visiting Moon Eyes USA in Santa Fe Springs. I'd gone to Moon Eyes Hawaii last month, and I'm still waiting to see the picture they took of us posted on their Instagram. Seen about 3 visitors a day get posted, but not us, but I never made it to the SoCal location because it's just such a pain to get down there, but I had another reason to visit Southeast LA County. I stopped by Downey Dave's Barbershop. If you don't recall, a few weeks ago we talked about Vic Munoz, who was recently reunited with a very special car.
Gifted to him by his late father. Now that Chevy Camaro was finally recovered.
CBS LA's Michelle Geely talked to the owner, who is very emotional to see the only thing he has left of his dad back with him once again.
I haven't seen this car in 17 years. It's gonna be tough.
Victor Munoz almost gave up on seeing his 69 Chevy Camaro ever again.
Yeah, this is my car. That's the car. That's my car.
Wow. A classic. But what's more important is that it was a sentimental gift from his late father. The day David Munoz returned from a tour in Vietnam, he bought the car. The younger Munoz received it on his 16th birthday, only to have it stolen years later.
So we talked about this, and that episode came out. And while I was on the plane to Hawaii, I got in touch with Vic, and we arranged a visit for me to come down and get the full story on the significance of the car, how it was stolen, and everything it took to get it back. Let's start with a little background on the car. Your dad bought it after he got back from Vietnam, right?
Yeah, he actually bought it the day he came home from Vietnam. He, my grandfather went and picked him up, and then before he went home, he stopped over at Paramount Chevrolet, not that far from here, and picked it up. You know, he actually was going to buy a Corvette, but when he cut off, he was talking to my grandfather. And my grandfather just told him, you can't afford the insurance. Oh, don't buy the Corvette. And they talked about how if he crashed the Corvette, he would have to go to a place that fixes boats.
Yeah, because of the fiberglass.
Right? So he just said, okay, fine. And he went with the Camaro. I think his insurance, he said, was something like $27 a month.
Oh, wow. But that was probably a lot back then.
Yeah, I mean, we still have the bill of sale. He paid $3,200 for the car.
And he bought it brand new?
Yeah, bought it brand new right off the showroom floor. Yep, that was his reward for coming home safe.
And he was like, what, 1920 at the time about?
1920?
Age?
Oh, no, wait, age?
Yeah, how old was he when he got
oh,
back?
Oh, my dad. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, yes. He was, what is he? He was, must have been 20. Well, I know he was in his 20s. Yeah, he had to have been at least 23, 24.
Okay.
Yeah, roughly. You know, he was in helicopters. Mm-hmm. That's what he did. You know, helicopters, side gunner. And yeah, that was, like I said, that was his thing. He wanted a Chevy. He wanted the Corvette, but yeah. You know, the Camaro was great. And he drove that thing. Trips to Texas every year. That car didn't leave his side until I got the car when I was 16 years old. He put it in the garage when I was maybe about 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
And it sat in there, you know, and I didn't know what I had.
And it just waited for you?
It waited for me, you know, and it's funny because I didn't know what I had, right? Mm-hmm. He had a car cover over it, and yeah. I didn't know. So he'd say stuff like, hey, go mow the lawn. I don't want to mow the lawn. Go mow the lawn, you know? So I'm throwing the lawnmower up against the car. Oh. And I'm doing stuff to it, you know? And when I got the car and, you know, he had one of his buddies come over. His name was Jim. Him and Jim are in my driveway, and they're changing the points in the distributor, and they're getting, mm-hmm. they're firing it back up for me and stuff. And I go inside and I tell him, Dad, what'd you do to this thing? Like, why are all the vents broken? What are all these stickers? And he says, Victor, you broke those vents. You're the one that sit there going back and forth and busted those vents. Those are your stickers all over the back of the car. And I'm like, wow, why'd you let me do that? You know? And even at that point, I still didn't know what I had. I didn't get it. You know, mm-hmm. I remember sitting in history, and I turn around and kids, his name was Philip. Phil was looking at a Super Chevy magazine,
mm-hmm.
and he's looking at the centerfold, and I see it, and I notice the three, you know, louvers on the side, you mm-hmm. know, and I go, oh, I have a car like that in my garage. And he looks up and he goes, no, you don't. I go, no, I do. You know? And he goes, what is it? I go, I don't know. Go find out. Go home. Hey, Dad, what is that? He goes, it's 69 Camaro. Okay. The next day, you know, it's a 69 Camaro. What kind of motor is it? I don't know. You know, Dad, what kind of motor is it? 307. Oh, okay. It's a 307. Well, that's cool. And after that, it was just like, I gravitated towards like the auto community, you know, mm-hmm. I was able to go into auto class when I was a sophomore. I stayed, you know, it was the bug, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. So I was stuck, you know, my auto teacher allowed me, he wanted to rebuild my motor,
mm-hmm.
and I was 16 years old and I rebuilt the motor in auto class, and
wow.
That was it. Yeah. I couldn't get away from it. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yep.
So at that point, the car was yours or?
Yeah. When I turned 16, you know, he gave me the car. It was still in his name at that point,
mm-hmm.
but I was driving it. He was driving something else at the time. I think he was driving a Dodge. It was a truck. Jeez. Anyways, he was driving a Dodge truck at the mm-hmm. time, and that's what he bought himself. And so I started driving the Camaro, and then that was my daily driver for the next bunch of years, you know, and until I kind of started. I got out of high school and then I started racing it, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was racing it. I was going to Irwin. Well, no, we were going to Terminal Island over there in San Pedro,
mm-hmm.
Brotherhood. We were doing that. And then when that closed down, and I was running that since I was like 16. Like when I was 16 years old, they were letting me run that track.
Wow.
And then that was so much fun. It gives me goosebumps thinking about those days, you know, my Brotherhood baseball cap and... then they closed down, and then they would allow us to run over at Pomona, and we used to be able to run Test and Tune over at Pomona almost every weekend, I think of what it was, and we were always over there. And then the, you know, ordinance started coming in, and they didn't allow the sounds, you know, and they started eliminating all the fun stuff for all the community, you know. And then it turned into Irwindale, and in the beginning, I put up my nose to Irwindale. Like, it's an eighth mile. I don't want to mm-hmm. do an eighth mile, you know? But after, like, six or seven runs, I realized that my car wasn't breaking down as much. You know? And I realized, like, eighth mile is really fun for the average, you know, for the weekend warrior, you know? Mm-hmm. Eighth mile is all you need. You don't need to go a quarter mile. So it was eighth mile for me at that point, you know, and had a good time with it, you know, and I had a couple of different Chevys that I would run, and the Camaro was I had a small fire in there, you know, I learned the hard way not to use the rubber fuel line.
Oh yeah,
The nitrous kit.
With the nitrous kit.
Don't use the rubber one. You know, opt in for the braided line. I mean, I don't know if it's still braided line today, but mm-hmm. opt in for the braided line at least. And I didn't, and I wanted to get the kit, you know, I wanted it in there real quick, and I ran it wrong, and I ended up melting the fuel lines, the nitrous kit, and just spilt, you know, fuel all over the engine compartment, and it went up for a little bit, and so it sat there for a couple years, you
wow.
know. Yeah, and by this time, I'm maybe 30, 31. Yeah, it's like 17 years ago.
Okay.
And that's when the whole thing started. That's when it got stolen.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to get into that part yet, but that's
Well, you might as well. So, like, what happened?
Oh, man. So, there's actually a couple of different... There's a couple of different versions to this.
All right.
Okay, so there's the cute version that my car got stolen from a shop, and 17 years later it was found.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great, but fact of the matter is, you know, I'm sure it was an inside job. I was getting the car restored.
All right.
And we were dropping new everything in it. And just from the ground up, and the paint job on it was beautiful at the time. Really super dark green. I wanted that. I still wanted that original Fathom green, but I wanted it like really, really dark, you know?
Right.
So I just said, put as much black as you can underneath that thing, you know? And then I want you to ghost in the stripes. I want some stripes down this thing, you know? And I want you to ghost them in really deep. So he did, and he got it. I mean, it was beautiful. And I was just waiting for some parts for the interior, you know, because it had a small mini tub in the back at this point now. And I had the seats redone. We gutted out the roll cage. We got rid of the roll cage. No more race car. This thing was going to go on the street again, you know.
All right.
And so it was. I was waiting for the interior. And it sat in their showroom because it was the nicest car they had at the time, because they did like insurance collisions and things like that. Okay. And so I get a phone call from him, and he's like, hey, Vic, hey, man, your car got stolen. Now, I know this sounds stupid now, but do you remember the show Overhauling?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, I got Steve something or another. He was one of the creators of the show. You know, I knew him. I knew him a little bit. He was an acquaintance of mine. He was trying to get me to do some work with him at the time. We went back and forth. We were talking. I said, you know, my cousin told him, like, I put an application in for this guy, you know, and, you know, he takes me upstairs to where all the file cabinets are. And he was joking me. He says, if you could find your file, I'll redo your car. You know? And I was like, oh, wow. But it looked like a football field, just wow. File cabinets all the way down. And we laughed. And then that was it. You know, we talked about him sending me some parts. I got some pieces of glass. And then 2 weeks later, I get the phone call saying that my car is stolen. So I call up my brother, and I'm like, hey, Steven, you know, come pick me up. Lewis just hit me up and said that my car got stolen, but I'm pretty sure Steve just, you know, my brother's name is Steven. I just said, but Steve, the other guy, said to us, but I'm pretty sure Steve picked it up. Like, oh my God, I can't believe what's going to happen right now. Like, I'm super excited.
Whoa.
My brother's like, nah, man, I don't see how that even makes sense. Like, your car is stolen. But I'm just like, no, you know, I'm stupid, you know? And then so I get there, and there's police everywhere, you know, there's a bunch of squad cars out there, and I said to him, hey, what's going on? And he's crying, you know, and I'm like, what are you crying for, dude? Like, what happened? And he goes, your car got stolen. And I'm like, how? And he goes, well, I had to put it in the yard. Like, what was it doing in the yard, you know? And he said, I had to put it back there. I had to move some stuff around. I said, dude, it was sitting in the corner. Like, it was sitting right in the very front. There was it was dust everywhere. Like, there's no reason to go in there.
Right.
And he said, yeah, it got stolen with a Mustang, with the fastback. And they put him on a couple trailers, and they busted the chain. They put him on a couple trailers, and then they bounced. As he's telling me the story, his neighbor comes over, and he's like, hey, man, what's going on? You know? And he goes, oh, his car got stolen. what? Oh my gosh, I was there. I saw it. But you know, Rex, his dog, Rex, he doesn't like nobody. And he went up to him and I thought it was you guys. I thought it was you. So I'm looking like everything's crazy, you know? He's like, no, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. He's like, that's weird. You know, Rex doesn't like anybody. And now I'm looking at everybody cross-eyed, you know, yeah. Now I'm mad at everybody. Like, I'm going, is this you? You know, like, I'm pissed. And and then I had to be calmed down a little bit, you know, because the stories were not making any sense. And that was it. Now at this point, he's the owner of the shop. He's like tearing up, like crocodile tears. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? Okay, what's your deal, dude? And he's like, do you have insurance on the car? And I'm like, no, I haven't had insurance on it in like 3 years. It's been non-op. Why? He goes, I haven't been able to afford insurance on the shop in 3 months.
Oh, no.
I'm like, are you serious? That was it. He's living with his mom. He's got nothing. There's nothing there. A month and a half later, the shop's closed. There's nothing. I got phone numbers, but I'm calling them. I got addresses. I'm showing up. And then Ontario police says, hey, if you keep bothering these people, we're going to arrest you.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You know, but I'm just like, dude, give me my dad's car back. You know, if it's an inside job, if it was somebody that he owed money to, you know, just give me my car back. Mm-hmm. Just give me my car back. I don't want to be your collateral damage, you know. And everybody ran in the circles and racing circles back then. These are all the street racers and stuff that used to run back in the day. We used to stop over at Frisco's over here in Downey, you know, Frisco's over in City of Industry. We used to race Compton, you know, Norwalk. And, you know, so it was, I know it was within like a circle of a circle, you know,
right.
None of my friends, mm-hmm. but it was somebody that I knew, you know, but at that point they were all in and there's nothing they can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was in 2009.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I spent the first couple years like Pomona swap meet, looking for parts, you know, mm-hmm. like I knew would know what my car looked like.
You would know, like, this came off of my car.
You know, yeah, you show me the grill, I'll show you, you know, if you show me my grill, I'll show you the little 3 centimeter crack that I picked off of it by accident. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
This is when I scratched it with the ratchet
exactly.
this time.
yeah, you know? So I've always looked around, and then, you know, a Facebook marketplace came up, and we had, you know, Craigslist back then, the recycler. Mm-hmm. I was always looking around. I was driving. If there was a 69 Camaro for sale, I was driving to go look at it. I was going to the Ecology Center up in, I don't know if that's Santa Fe Springs or Norwalk, but the Ecology Center is like a pick-apart place.
Okay.
I would go down there every so often and just start wandering, you know, because mm-hmm. back then you could still see, you would still find, you know, old Camaros like
right.
that, you know, in the junkyard, you know, I pulled many parts, you know, growing up over there. And so I would just go wander like a nomad, just wandering around, like hoping like one day I'm going to see this thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I never did, you know? And what really sucked about the whole thing is that, like, my dad, for whatever reason, I don't know, you know, I was doing things back then. I mean, I was doing the big things back then, you know, and he thought that I had no time for it anymore. And he thought I sold it.
Oh
yeah. You know, I tell him like, dad, I didn't sell it, you know? And even my brother was like, dad, he didn't sell it. Like, I was there. He's like, no, you're covering for your brother. He sold it. Why would you sell it? I didn't sell it. Why would I sell this thing? You know? And so you know, I gave up on it. I gave up looking. There was nothing, you know. I would every so often I would go down to Ontario, because that's where, you know, where it was at. I would go down to Ontario Police Department and I would give them the police report number. I always kept the pamphlet, you
right.
know. I've been through a divorce, I've been through different houses, I've been through a lot, and one of the only things that I held on to was the pamphlet of that they gave me when they wrote it up, when they mm-hmm. wrote the police report, you know, with the police report number. So every time I'd call them up, I'd give them, you know, here's a police report. And they would say, oh, no update. Okay, cool, no update. All right, of course, no update. And then that was it. So a couple years ago, I'm switching out my phone and I'm going through the photos, and I used to see picture after picture of the Camaro when it was done up and when it was just beautiful. And it really took me down, like a really just spiral. Like I was, it just, I felt like crap. Like I didn't want to see it anymore, you know? it really, after the Camaro was stolen, like I was done with cars. I was over it. I just felt like the universe just said, okay, your fun is over. I could never shake it. And, I got rid of all my other toys. When I went through my divorce, I had this big fire sale. I went down to Home Depot and I bought a stack of Homer buckets for, they were $5, right? I think they were $4 without the lid. And I bought a stack of them and I brought them back and I just started filling them up with tools, Craftsman tools. And I was just filling them up. I filled up every single bucket and I sold every single bucket for $5 a piece.
Oh, wow.
I was just in a super bad, I was married 23 years, you know what I mean? It's my high school sweetheart, you know? So I was just like, I was done. And there's like the Camaro now. I'm like, I am over it. I just, life, right? and I just had a big fire sale, and then after that I just said I'm never gonna look at cars again. And then when the Camaro came up, I just said I don't want to see it no more, and I purged my phone of every single photo, everything that said that there was a car there. I just said no, I don't want it. And out of nowhere, he wants to stay anonymous. You met him. We were talking about stolen cars in here in the barbershop, you know, and I said, hey, what does it look like when, you know, you have a stolen car? Like if you run up on a stolen car, does it say like stolen across your screen, like in big red letters, like in the movies? And he goes, no, it just says it right here in the corner. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I want to know what mine looks like when you run it. And I go here, and I went over to the table over here, and I wrote on a big piece of paper, I wrote in big letters, my license plate number. And then I wrote, Vic's Camaro, 69 Camaro. Don't forget it. And I handed it to him, and I'm like, I wrote it this big so you don't forget it. I don't want you to just throw it in the back of your car. And he's laughing. He's like, oh, come on, Vic. And that was it. 3 weeks later, I'm going to my car, and he comes barreling up, just comes racing up, really far, really fast. Hey, what's cool? Who's this? I said, I don't know. He goes, well, this guy is registered to your car. You know him? No, I don't know this guy. So he's like, no, dude, it's registered to your car. I've been trying to get a hold of you since yesterday. I'm looking at my phone. He's got like messages. I don't know how I missed his messages. I don't miss anybody's messages. I have two phone numbers on this thing. And he goes, you got to get your ass over to Ontario Police. You need to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay. And then I go down to Ontario and I'm shaking on my way up. Like it's kind of getting me a little emotional now. Like I was shaking going up. I didn't think it was real. Like I had no idea, you know. I was doing like an hysterical laugh all the way there. Like this is not it. This is not it. Like there's no way after 17 years. And then I get there and I tell him I said, hey, run the police report. And I gave him the police report number. And she runs the police report. And I said, is there any updates on it? And she said, no, it's still the same. She says, no, it's still the same. So I said, okay, do me a favor. Run the license plate. She runs the license plate. She goes, what? What? And she's running, she's looking at it. She goes, I don't understand. And I go, yeah, I don't understand either. And then she goes, who's blah, blah, blah? And I go, that's exactly. $1 million question. Who is this guy? And why does he have my car? So she's like, okay, well, this is weird, you know? So she's like, but then she said, why is it written up as a stolen part? And then I looked at her and I go, you tell me. And she goes, I don't understand this. Hold on. So then she gets up and she walks away. She walks away and she takes off to the back. And she lets me stand out there for like 10 minutes. And I'm pacing. I'm counting the squares and the tiles. I'm counting everything. I'm just pacing. And So I, she comes out like 10 minutes later, felt like it was an hour, but it was 10 minutes. And she goes, okay, everything's fine now. And I go, fine now, you know? And I, and then she kind of looks at me again, because that's my, you know, being a barber, being a salesman, I listen to your words, you know, I listen to what you say. And when she said that, I went, oh, you messed up. You know, what happened? What? Tell me, you know, I'm not mad. Just tell me, I'm getting my car back. There's nothing you can say that's going to upset me right now. So, so she goes, no, it's all fixed. And I said, okay, but what's fixed? She goes, no, nothing, nothing. And then she goes, but, so you have to go down to Whittier and Whittier PD, cause that's where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to go, they're the ones that are going to go get it. So I was like, okay, cool. So I was like, as soon as they said, you know, Whittier PD was going to go get it, I went, oh man, okay. So then I go down to Whittier PD and I'm all excited and I show them, here you go, this is my car, you know, and it was stolen. And they're like, nah, we're not going to touch it. Yeah, we're not going to touch it. So I said, what do you mean you're not going to touch it? Because, no, that's a civil matter. I go, civil matter?
Civil matter.
Yeah, civil matter. What are you talking about? Civil matter. You know, it's like, no. So we're going back and forth. And then she looks it up again. She goes, it's not written up as stolen. It's written up as a stolen part. So I'm going, okay, wait, I'm lost. What's going on? So I'm like, wait, okay, this is the second time I've heard this. And when I said that, she clammed up. And she just clammed up. She goes, well, I don't understand. I go, could you print that out for me that it says it's a stolen part? She goes, no. So I said, okay. So then she goes, you have to go back to Ontario. So I said, okay. So I drive all the way back to Ontario from Whittier. And then I said, hey, I just left, you know, just got back. And then they said this. So then she goes, well, we have to call the DOJ. We'll call you. This is on a Sunday, by the way. Okay. They're only open until like 2 in the afternoon. And then they call the DOJ. And on Monday, because everything was closed that day, the people they need to talk to. So then Monday, I called them back. And she said, yeah, okay, we called them up. And it was never recovered. It was never, because she said that it was not in the stolen car registry at all. Like, they didn't have it in the stolen car registry. And so she said, it must have been taken out, is what she said. She goes, after 5 years, it can get purged from the system. And it must have gotten taken out of the system. That's the only thing, or some kind of fraud happened. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, cool. You know, figure it out. Right. So they called, and then the DOJ gave them permission to put it on the system. They said on their side, it was never purged. In their side, it was never recovered. So there was, you know, and, this was an illegal sale or whatever. And, you know, go get his car back. So they said, okay. So then they put it back in the system, or they put it in the system as a stolen vehicle. So then I go back down to Whittier, and then Whittier is like, no, we're not going to touch it. So then I leave, and then I'm mad, you know? So then mm-hmm. I call back. I'm outside, and I call, and I go, I want to talk to a patrolman. I want to talk to a patrolman. And then they're just like, for what? I go, Mike, I want my car back, you know? But I'm outside in the parking lot. I'm in the street, you know, in front of the police station, you know? And so then they get me on the phone with a patrolman, and I said to him, hey, you know, my car's back there, and I want it. And he goes, dude, we're not going to touch it. He's like, you got it. We're not going to do Ontario's job. We're not going to get a warrant for this. You got to get a warrant. I'm like, me? I cut hair. I don't do this, man. And I had to tell him the story. You know, that was the thing. I had to tell everybody the story. Like, you know, listen, man, this is, I'm not asking you to pick up, like, a 2012, like, whatever, you know,
yeah.
TP Cruiser. I'm talking about, if there was even 2012. I know this was my dad's 69 Camaro, you know, the one that he bought the day he came home from Vietnam. Please, please help me with this. I said, please just get, do something, man. So then, he says, fine, I'll do it. And then he calls me back like half an hour later. And he said, I'm in the backyard, and this is the Whittier PD. He's, I'm in the backyard. And I was like, okay. And I'm vibrating at this point. And he goes, I see your car. And I go, it's my car. You know, it's my car. And he goes, yeah, I ran it. It's your car. And I go, no way. And he's like, yeah. All right, cool. What are we going to do now? Do I go get it? Like, I've never dealt with this before. I go, do I just go pick it up? What do we do? Do I got to get a tow truck? And he goes, no, you can't do anything with it right now. I go, okay, well, are you guys going to go get it? And he goes, I'm not getting it. I go, well, what are you going to do? And he goes, I'm not touching it. I said, well, but you, my car. And he was just like, no, I'm not touching it. And he goes, it's too complicated. I'm not touching it. And I'm like, well, didn't you run it? And he goes, yeah, I ran it. So it says that the car, when you ran it, they told you that it was stolen. He goes, yeah, they told me it was stolen. So you telling me that you have your eyes and your hands on stolen property right now, and you're not going to do anything about it? And he took this big gasp, like a, I'm going to call Ontario right now. And I said, okay. So 2 hours later, I get a phone call from him again. And he says, hey, I turned it over to San Bernardino because Ontario didn't want it. Oh, man. So what now? The car just going to stay there? And he said, yeah. Oh, God. Okay. So that's day one that the guy knows that my car is there, that he knows that the car is stolen. And, you know, so they call Ontario. Ontario calls me up the 2 days later and says, oh, by the way. Well, anyway, Ontario calls me up 2 days later and says, hey, yeah, your car's there, but it's out of our jurisdiction. We're not touching it. So I'm like, okay, so what do I do? You got to go to Whittier. I go, but Whittier doesn't want to do it. Let me call them. Call them an hour later. Yeah, Whittier doesn't want to touch it. They don't want to touch it. They should be, they're the only ones that are supposed to touch it. Okay, so you keep telling me all these things that nobody wants to do. Can you tell me something that somebody's going to do? And at this point, I'm kind of like annoyed, you know? But I'm trying to keep my composure, and I'm not trying to be a jerk, you know? And I'm not trying to be upset because I'm still not even believing that I'm going to get it, you know? You hear horror stories, you mm-hmm. know? I've heard horror stories here. And Ontario says, well, I'm going to call up LA County, and I'm going to see if they can go, if they'll do something about it, if Whittier doesn't. So I said, okay, cool. So the next day, 2 days later, I get a phone. Now, this is already like a week has gone by. And I get a phone call from another detective from LA. And he basically made me audition to go pick up the car. Why should we pick you? Like, what do you mean? Why should you pick me? Because we're a highly elite automotive recovery unit.
Oh no.
that uses many resources. Why should we choose you? And I went, oh, I didn't know I was auditioning for a show. At that, and then I can hear it in his voice that I already pissed him off. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh man, I'm never gonna see this car. My mouth is getting me in the way right now. I needed just to be quiet. And I told him, I had to tell him the story mm-hmm. again, you know, this is my dad's car. And, you know, at this point now, I'm mad. Like, they're ruining the story at this point.
Yeah.
You know? They're ruining it for me. And I feel like a fool. I feel like, I really just feel like a jackass at this point. Because this, you know, like, why do I feel like I'm really inconveniencing these people? And so, you know, I was like, and at the end I said, is that good enough for you? You know, and he goes, well, I'm going to roundtable this with my partners tomorrow and we'll see if we want to pick up the case. And I said, all right, cool. And I said, I'm not going to hold my breath. Thank you. And we hung up. And then the next day he calls me up and he goes, hey, I'm in front of your car. Can you identify it? I'm like, well, you know, last I saw it had a really beautiful paint job. It had two stripes right down the middle. And he goes, yeah, this is your car. And I was like, okay, all right, now we're something. And I go, when can we get the car?
He's like, we're not going to touch it.
And he goes, he said to me, well, hold on. And I go, hold on what? And I'm not kidding you. I felt my throat just like drop when he said, hold on. He said, hold on. I need to talk to you about something. And I said, what? I just said to him, what? Right? I'm had it up to here. And he said, you don't want this car back. And I go, why don't I want this car back? He goes, yeah, he put a lot of money into it. Okay. He said that he purchased the car in 17 and I believe him. So I said, okay, that sucks. You know, feel bad for him. Okay. He goes, but he said he put a lot of, he said he put a lot of time into it. And, I don't think you want this car back. It needs too much work. So I said, did he put a lot of time into it or does it need a lot of work? What are we talking about here? And he goes, well, it's going to need a lot of work. You're not going to get this car back together again. And I go, I'm not. And he goes, you'll never get this car back together again. And at that point now, I feel like he was just taking a jab at my integrity. He was taking a jab at my manhood, basically. What do you mean I'm not going to get this car back together again? You know? So I was like, no, I'm not selling him my car. And then he said, no, listen, Victor, I really think you should sell him this car. Okay. You know, you should sell him this car. It's in bad shape. You know, it had a roll cage in it. It had this in it. And all I'm thinking, you know, somebody tubbed it and I'm thinking, yeah, I did that. Yeah, I did that. That was a really nice chromoly cage. Like that was a nice 12 bolt, you know, like that was a nice setup, but was back there, you know, I did that. But I wasn't telling him this. Mm-hmm. So you don't want this car back, you know? I really think you should sell it to him. I'm like, no, I'm not gonna sell it to him. But he was there talking to him. He was in front of him. He didn't meet me face to face. He met me on the phone. I was just a jackass to him. I was just a guy that made a smart ass remark when I didn't, whatever. And then after him almost insisting by the fifth time, me selling him my car, he goes, he'll give you a good amount of money for it. He'll do it. I already talked him into it for you. I already did it for you. I said, no, I'm fine. I said, look, man. I will cut that car in little pieces and recycle it before I allow somebody else to put my dad's car on the street. Please, I'm not gonna sell him the car. Please stop asking me. When am I gonna get my car back? And he just took this big breath and he goes, I'm going to give him a week to take the car apart. I said, what? He goes, well, he's showed me a couple of receipts. So I'm going to let him take the whole car apart. You're not going to get anything back. You're just going to get back a body. I don't even know why you want that. You should really just sell it to him. That's all you're going to get back is the body. So I said, well, what's on it now? He goes, you don't need to worry about what's on it now. I go, but what if it's my part? And he goes, none of it was yours. I saw photos. None of it was yours. I saw a photo with the car taken apart. And I said, man, I've taken that car apart twice. The second time I did it in 45 minutes. You know, me and a couple buddies. We had that whole car stripped down to the body in 45 minutes. And I want to see the car. Like, well, I want to see this. So maybe there's something there that belongs to me. And he goes, there's nothing there that belongs to you. I go, when am I going to get my car back? And he goes, 7 or 8 days. And I go, do I have a choice? He said, no. So, all right. So we hung up. Oh, at that point, though, before that, he goes, look, he could keep you in court. Like, he could lock you up in court for a year and a half. You don't want that. So just let him take the car apart. And I go, you're not asking me. You're telling me, right? And he goes, yeah, I'm telling you. And I said, okay, then I don't have a choice. And then we hung up. So then I hung up and I was like, you know what? I'm that guy that would cut off his nose to spite his face, you know. So I called him back right away. I said, hey, you know what, you're right, let's take this to court, you know, let's let the judge decide what belongs to who. Get my car right now and then we'll both show up with receipts. And then he started screaming at me on the phone. Man, he was mad because, you know, he was just, like I said, he was in front of the guy and, you know, I made him look bad and I didn't mean to. I'm not I got a lot of friends that are police officers, you know. I got a lot of customers that are, they're the ones that were egging me on the whole time, you know, because those are the ones that act like real humans with me, you know, the ones that my friends and my clients, they act like real humans and they know how, you know, there's the officer side and then there's the human side, you know, and they know it's a game and they're the ones that are egging me on. They're the ones that are telling me, they're the ones in the background going like, no, now tell him this, now tell him that. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to tell him this, you know? And then, so I would do it. And it was just making him more mad. So I called him back and I said, hey, you know what? You're right. Let's do this. Let's take this to court. Let's let the courts decide. And he was just like, oh, no. This is what I get for doing anybody a favor. And I go, favor. I go, you're doing your job, you know? And then he's trying to put the blame on Whittier. And then I'm like, why are we doing this right now? Like, just get my car. And he said, no. And I waited 8 days. I waited 12 days, I think, 13 days later. And I got, when I got the car back from the tow yard, he picked it up, had it towed, and yeah, all I got back was the body. I didn't give anything back. He had photos. He has photos of the car complete, but he doesn't want to give them to me. And it's fine. You know, it's fine. I'm not trying to make any problems or nothing, but yeah, he took the car apart again. So the car was taken apart, you know, twice.
But you saw these photos.
No, I didn't see.
Oh, you didn't
photos.
See any
no,
of them?
No, I never saw the photos. It had doors. It had the fenders. The what's a trip, though, is that the hood was still there. So there was a... I really wish I could check on him now. I haven't seen these guys. I've been away from the racing scene for so many years. You know, I feel stupid sometimes. People are talking to me about LS engines and stuff. I'm like, what's an LS motor? You know, with that, you know? And I feel stupid. But well, the guy that was building my engine at the time, Saad, he had a brother that owned a Matco truck. And they used to race Grand Nationals. And he was building my motor, and he had a couple of beautiful Z28s. And I was over at the shop, and I told him that I was getting the car painted, you know, and he's an old timer at the time. And he goes, hey, climb up that ladder and jump on the office building in the warehouse. So I said, all right, whatever. I'd do anything for that guy. And I get up there, and he says, you see those hoods up there? And he goes, yeah, grab one. Grab the one that looks the best. So they had, he had two 69 original 1¾-inch cowl hoods, you know. And I was like, okay, cool. I take one down, you know, I take it down. And he says, take it, keep it, it's yours. So I was like, oh, wow, you know. So now I had this real cowl inducted hood, you know, it was beautiful. I was like, this is awesome. And the hood stayed with, there was no fenders, no inner fenders, there's no wheels, there was no tubular A-arms, there's no nothing. The dashboard was gone, the plastics was gone, the vents were gone. But the hood stayed with the car.
So you have the hood now.
I have the hood.
Oh.
Yeah, I have the hood. So I have the hood, and I have the trunk. I have the deck lid. I have the trunk. So I have those parts, you know, and I have the body. It's missing the VIN numbers up on top. It's missing the plate, and it's missing the one on the dash. And I was trying to take care of that on Monday with no luck. So that's going to be a process. Yeah, but... that's where I'm at right now.
So what is your ultimate vision, though? Like, when this is done, what's it going to look like? Is it going to be back to stock like you were trying to do? Or is it going to be, are you going to put it back the way you had it when you were racing?
Well, the dream is, the ultimate dream would be just to turn it, I guess, into like a resto mod, I guess what you call them right now, you know? These LSs that these guys are talking about now seem to be pretty badass, you know? So, I've been reading up on them, watching videos on them and stuff. I haven't had my hands on one yet. It's only been, it's been a real emotional ride,
right?
Basically. Like, I have so many ups and downs, from this thing. You know, I would love to update the suspension, you know. I would love to be able to put it on something new, something more modern, something more comfortable. I would love to have the original interior put back in, you know. It was an automatic with the 8 shifter, you know, but when I was driving it towards the end, you know, I had a I forget which shifter I had on there, but I had a Hurst shifter on there. I had a couple different ones at one time. But I would like to put, you know, I would love the whole inside to be original, but with, you know, with the whole updated air conditioning unit. And I would like to be able to turn it into a daily driver, but like a nice, comfortable daily driver, you know, like a nice, comfortable daily driver, but with something that's loud and fast, you know, even though there's nowhere to drive it around here anymore.
Yeah.
That's a real bummer that there's no place to race around here anymore.
Yeah.
Right. That's tough. I don't know where anybody does that anymore.
So. Yeah. You've already started looking for parts. What hurdles are you having?
Things aren't double what they were 17 years ago. Things are like 4, 5, 6 times what they were 17 years ago. And the hurdle that I have right now is that this isn't a project that I didn't prepare for, like I prepared for. You know, I never... In my, you know, I said I gave up on cars. I think I 5 or 6 years ago, I almost dipped my toe and said, I'm going to go buy a beater somewhere, just like a, like an old truck or something, you know, and put it back together again. And I just said, why are you mm-hmm. fooling yourself? You know, stop. You're not going to, it's not the Camaro, you know, mm-hmm. you're not going to be happy. You know, you're just going to, it's just going to be another one of your quick turnaround hobbies and you're going to get rid of it later, you know? So I just said, no, I'm not going to do it, you know? And then realizing that, like, it's not just the car, it's the tools, it's the stuff that you accumulated over the decades of mm-hmm. time, you know, and I walked away from all of that, you know. And, you know, I went through, you know, like I said, I was married 23 years. I went through a deep depression. I was, you know, we was a whole lot. So I had a lot of ups and downs. I let everything go. So every time my mind says, what are you going to do with the car? I go, oh, it's going to look like this. But first you have to do this. And then, but before you do that, you have to do that. And by the time I get to that beginning stage in my mind, I'm exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, how in the hell are you going to do this? There's just no way. You know, if I were to think about building this Camaro, it would be 7 or 8 years from now. I'm going to be almost 60.
Mm-hmm.
This sucks. This is not the 30-year-old me, you know, that's going to get to enjoy this. This is something that, you know, I'm going to, you know, this sucks, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't have the money to just throw on this thing today. You know, people are like, you know, I was like, oh, I'd be able to, you know, I didn't think it was going to look as bad as it did. I thought, mm-hmm. oh, you know, I'll figure out a way, you know, and I'll start saving for it. I'll start doing something for it now. And when I started getting quotes for like $70,000, just like, how in the hell do these guys do this stuff now? Mm-hmm. You know, what are they doing? And then at the same time, I realize that if this wasn't my dad's car, I would be a fool. Somebody like me. I'm not a millionaire. I don't have that FU money, you know, where you see, you know, on the Barrett Jackson where they're just like $100,000 for that, you know, mm-hmm. for that car. I don't have that money. So for me to spend $70,000, which, you know, $70,000 isn't $70,000. $70,000 is $85,000, mm-hmm. right? So if I'm going to spend $80,000 on this car, and it's only going to be worth $50,000 maybe to somebody that wants to buy it,
mm-hmm.
and who's going to buy it, right? I would be a real huge fool to spend this money. I can't do it. I don't have that extra money. And it would be, you know, and it just took me down another dark path. Like, wow, like you're not going to get this money anytime soon. And two, even if you did, you shouldn't, because you don't have, that's not, you know, that's not in my cards. That's not the cards that I was dealt in life, mm-hmm. you know, to do this. So, that's where I was stuck. And then when the car came home, you know, CBS, Los Angeles, they picked it up,
mm-hmm.
and they ran, a really nice story. And,
yeah.
You know,
that's how I found out about it.
They ran a really nice story on it, and the GoFundMe hit, you know, I don't know how to do a GoFundMe, dude. I have no idea how to do it. I'm just sitting there like, mm-hmm. I can do it. How you do it? And I put it at like 50,000, you know, and then it said like, do the algorithm, and I hit a button in it. I think that's when I found out it was at 4,000 is mm-hmm. when I heard your podcast. And I thought, 4,000? What is this 4,000?
I was like, what a deal.
Yeah, right? He's going to build this car for $4,000. He only needs $4,000? I wish. And then I go back in there and I try to fix it again. And I'm just like playing around with it too much. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, this is stupid. Like, nothing. And then, you know, I'm trying to get the social media up, you know, because people were reaching out. Somebody, you know, people in the beginning were like, I got doors with glass, mm-hmm. but I'm in Arizona. And I'm like, I will drive to Arizona. Mm-hmm. Let's go. And then I don't hear from them again. Yeah. Right. So there was a lot of that, you know, there's been a lot of that. And there's one or two guys, I don't want to say their names yet, but they've reached out, you know, and then, you know, and they're talking about a couple of things here and there. And then I have an epoxy flooring company, Epoxy Boys. Yeah. Epoxy Boys. They, they want to give me some money. They want to give me a couple thousand towards the car parts and stuff like that. So there's like a couple people that are getting there. And it was in the beginning, it was like, whoa, wait a minute, this might happen. Because like I said, I would feel really stupid putting this car together. Like it would be like, I wish I could just like close my eyes and then somebody just go and then buy a Camaro somewhere, right? And then just take mine away and then put it there and then just tell me that it's mine. Tell me that it's my dad's car. Mm-hmm. And then I'll believe it, right? And then, and instead of spending $85,000 or $80,000 on the car, we only spent $40,000. Mm-hmm. We only spent $35,000, right? And so, so I just kept saying, you know, well, if this happens through crowdfunding, well, I'm not going to feel stupid. I'm going to feel honored. I'm mm-hmm. This is different. This is crazy. This is not one person spending $85,000. This is 50 people spending $1,000. This is 100 people spending $500. This mm-hmm. is, you know, this is whatever, $10, you know, this could be 300 people. It's not stupid anymore. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. This is great. Like, this is really cool. It's humbling, you know, it's super humbling. And when it felt like it was a reality and it felt, you know, because you kind of get that in the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. again, motions, they go up, they go down, reality, not reality. And, you know, so when I was not in reality, it was like, whoa, this is going to be done. Oh my gosh, this is going to be done next week. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to build a whole car in a week, you know? And I was like, wow, this is crazy. Like, why are these people doing this for me? Why would they want to do this for me? And it was like, dude, you gotta, if this happens, you know, no matter what, you better be a good person. No matter mm-hmm. what, you better figure out a way to pay this forward. You better, you know, and so, it, you know, so you start going down that rabbit hole and then you just start, you know, but then it couldn't, it's funny. I tell people this couldn't have happened at a worse time, because it's car show season. So all the people that I want to talk to about this, they were all at the LS Fest in Vegas. And now they're going to go to Texas, which I just learned about the LS Fest, Holly LS Fest. So I was like, wow, I want to go now. So, you know, the Texas and then SEMA, all there's a bunch of shows coming up, right? So everybody's busy with the shows, you know? And so some of the manufacturers that have possibly reached out or that I'm reaching out to, they're just like, okay, you know, we're going to maybe in a couple months, you know, in a couple months. And I'm just sitting there just scratching, just like, oh my God, you know, let's do it. You know, like I want to get it done today. But, and then, you know, and plans fall through, you know, people always have great intentions, you know, and then things just don't always go the way they are. So I'm constantly looking around. I'm doing dumb things to stay busy. If I can't work on the car, I'm trying to get the GoFundMe going. I go down to all the car shows in the cities, mm-hmm. all the different car, Point of Park, Compton car show, Pomona car show. I've been driving to all the off ramps on the freeways where I get the addresses, you know, for the car shows the next morning. And I've been posting, posters on I've been posting posters just saying, you know, stolen 69, just to kind of keep the buzz going, you know. I haven't been posting anything because one, there's like nothing to post, and mm-hmm. then every time I want to post something, I just start like just start getting discouraged, you know. Yeah. What I mean, and I've been trying to turn that around. I've been trying to put in some new content, you know, to kind of just like get it. I just keep telling myself, okay, you can't physically wrench on the car right now. At least do something to keep mm-hmm. it going, to keep the story moving, to keep, somebody's going to notice you eventually, you know. Maybe that'll be the one, you know, yeah. that kind of gets it done. But that's kind of where I'm at right now. Plus I'm open, you know, I'm here at all day at the barbershop, you know, but I don't have the money. I don't have the extra money to build on it. But even if I have to work for the money to go do it, like I've been trying to think outside the box. I've been mm-hmm. trying to figure out ways just to kind of like do it, you know, odd jobs, get it done, just whatever it is I need, whatever it takes. I'm excited to do something to get it finished, you know. But ultimately, I guess going back to your first question, what is the car going to look like? I would love for it to have, you know, a nice suspension, updated motor. I want to keep the mini tub in the back. I like the big wheels. You know, it would be really cool. There's a lot of cool suspension companies. There's some cool suspension companies around the corner from here, man. Wow.
This is a great place for all that stuff.
I had no idea, man. I had no idea. I'm looking at stuff, and there's like, oh, they have stock 69 Camaro chassis that you can just drop your body on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you want it with or without the mini tub? And I'm going, what? I have a mini tub. What's going on with this, you know? And what do you mean they're in Huntington Beach? What do you mean they're over here? What do you mean they're over there? Like, they're right around the corner from here. And yeah, that's been pretty exciting, you know, but like I said, it's all window shopping right now.
Yeah.
I'm just like looking and going, oh, what's going on, you know? I tried to reach out. I tried to reach out to Classic Industries.
Yes.
Because people were asking me, they were asking me, you know, about donations and stuff like that. And I was telling people, you know what I really would love? It parts, you know, if like, and so, but I couldn't tell people like, oh, I needed the right and left fender, inner fender wells off of a 69 Camaro part number, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Right. So I had this dumb idea that I would go down to Classic Industries and just be like, hi, I know this sounds stupid, but is there any way that we can build a bridal registry where we just put a list together of everything that I need, and then I'm going to redirect, instead of directing everybody to the GoFundMe, we redirect everybody to your website, and then on there, they're going to go, help Victor, mm-hmm. and then donate now, and then you click on there, and then parts.
Yeah.
And then I just get parts mailed to mm-hmm. me, or I get to go pick them up. Right. And then, you know, and then we get to do some content on that. We get to do something with that. But they were just like, they were scratching their head going, who are you? You know, so regardless, you know, needless to say, nobody called me back.
Yeah,
it was one of those things. Where we'll call you.
It is. It's a good idea, though. I mean, if someone starts doing that, like that could be the new next big thing.
I really thought it was something good. You know, I thought it was smarter than me getting money, because mm-hmm. honestly I feel stupid getting the money. It's like I want the parts.
Yeah.
Like, this would be really cool. Like I don't know, I mean, either way it's exciting, you know, if it happens. But like I said, right now everything's just kind of dead. We're waiting.
Mm-hmm.
The shows are in the way, the content needs to get back up.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, it's a whole different world. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So talk a little bit about this barbershop too, because this was also your dad's, wasn't it?
Yeah, my dad was a barber in Downey for over 50 years before he passed. He used to work at a barbershop called Mr. Rudy's, like a block and a half away from here, down the street behind us. And he started working there. He was working, I'm trying to remember the name. He was doing helicopter. He was working in helicopters when he got out of the army, and he did that for a couple of years before they shut down the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So then he got his license when he was 16, and so he just decided that he was just going to go back to barbering, and he did in what 71 I think he went back or 70 yeah 71 I think he went back into barbering. And it was right next door to, it was called Mr. Rudy's, and it was right next door to a salon called La Jolie. And that's where he met my mom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, and they hit it off really quick and got married real fast. And then in 75, that's when I was born, mm-hmm. a long time ago. And then in 1992, my dad got a phone call from Sal. The barbershop used to be called Sal's Saloon, and my dad helped him build this here, but it was over here in the mm-hmm. on this side of the corner. He helped him build it in the mid 70s, and there was only a couple barbershops here back in the day, you know, not like it is today. And so they all helped each other. They'd all come over, you know, whoever was closing last, they would all go over there to that barbershop and have a couple beers before going home, you know. And so at night my dad would help him build the barbershop out, and,
mm-hmm.
and that was it. And he would go back to work the next day. And then in 92, he called up my dad and said, hey, I'm retiring. Do you want the shop? You want to buy the shop? And he said, sure. There it goes again. He said, do you want to buy the shop? Okay. He said, he called up my dad and said, do you want to buy the shop? And he said, sure. And he bought the shop and he came here, and then, he built a station in the back. It was a three-chair shop, and he built a station in the back. And he put my mom back there. My mom quit Lajolais, and she came over here. I call them her blue hairs. And she would, I forgot about that. There's a switch on my glasses that turns them off. Anyways, so my mom came over here to work in the back in the salon, and they worked here. They worked here together for years and years and years and years. And then in 17, I came here roughly, it's been a little long now. It's been 10, 11 years now, I think. I came here. Again, I was going through a lot of stuff back then, and I just said, I'm gonna go back to cutting hair. I got my license right out of high school. My mom was bugging me, go to college. Like, what am I gonna do? Go get your license to do hair so you can work the shop. Okay. And my mom talked me into coming to the shop. She's like, just go. Like, you gotta clear your head. Go, yeah. You know? So I did. So I came here and started cutting hair with my dad. And then we, it was interesting in the beginning, you know, and I would say, I think it was 15, we remodeled it, and he was going to retire, and he just kept talking about retiring. And when I said, okay, so me and my brother, we decided to remodel the shop for him. And when we remodeled it, I turned it into a 5-chair shop, and my mom was retiring. She was not going to cut hair anymore. So then he said, I don't like the way it looks. I don't like the shop. I don't like the way it looks. Why? Why do you need so many chairs? I put a roof over your head. I fed all three of you with three chairs. Why do you got to make it so big? I said, Dad, it's the same shop. I just added 2 chairs. And I really only added one. If you eliminate my mom's, I only added 1 chair. And he was just like, I don't like it. I don't like it. So he would sit here in the corner back here, you know, and cut all of his old timers. And that's all he would do. He would get here really early in the morning and just pound out 7-minute haircuts, you know, until like 1 o'clock. And then he would, in the beginning, clients would come in when they would see it, and they would go, Dave, it's the shop. He goes, yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. You know, I don't know why he did this. You know, like, no, Dave, it looks good. It does, you know. And then the next guy, Dave, the shop looks great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the next guy, Dave, the shop looks great. It does, doesn't it? Yeah, you did a good job. Yeah, I did. I did a good job. I did a good job. And he was taking credit for the shop, man, until the day he passed away. Oh, man. Yeah, that was funny. And then, I was here. I was still kind of, at that point, I was kind of in and out. I had other things that I was doing too, you know, so I was here kind of part-time coming in and coming out, but I would miss this place so much. I was supposed to be in a meeting in like Santa Fe Springs. Mm-hmm. And then I would drive past Santa Fe Springs, and then I would show up to the barbershop, and I'd be like, why am I here? I'm not even supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be in a meeting right now. I'd call him up. I'm not going to the meeting. I'm going to be at the barbershop with my dad. So I'd hang out here, you know, and just wait for people to show up and just chill. And I realized my ulcer went away. My stress was gone. I didn't, you know, I wasn't worried about anything anymore. Everything was just good. You know, my dad was right. Your friends come and see you. You don't have to go see them, you know? So it was like every day is like an adventure here, you know? And so, I've been here ever since. He passed away in 17, in September, I think it was, 2017. He had cancer, and, it took him quick. He was more pissed off. I remember it was Thursday. I think he was going to play golf on a Friday, or no, it was Saturday. He was going to play golf on Sunday, and he calls me up. He just left, and he calls me up, and he says, "Hey, I'm going to the VA." I said, "For what?" He goes, "Something's happening. I'm going to go to the VA." I said, "Okay." I go, "All right, I'll be there. I'm going to finish cleaning up, and I'm going to go." So he drove over there, and so I finished up here, and then I left, and then I went over there, and he was still in the waiting room. I'm like, "What's going on?" He's like, "I don't know." So he gets in the back, and we were there for a couple hours, and he sends me home, you know, and then they're going to keep him and stuff. And then the next morning I go back over there, and they tell me, you know, he's got cancer. So cancer. I said, "Dad, what's going on?" He says, "I got cancer." "Well, what now?" He goes, "I don't know. They won't let me leave." Where do you want to go?" He goes, "I tee off at 8 o'clock. Dad, you're not going to go play golf today. Come on. And he was pissed. He was so mad. So anyway, so then, you know, they tell me cancer, you know, they're going over options. They're doing more tests and stuff, but it was bad. It was fast. Mm-hmm. It got him in a month. He had like a whole MRI or CAT scan like 6 months prior and he was clean. And then this time he had like a golf ball size tumor.
Oh, no.
It was just there. Yeah. It took him so fast though. He was in no pain. It was, you couldn't ask, you know, if you have to go, that's the way I want to go. That was the way I want to go. And yeah, that was it. Like I said, the crappy part is that this guy was able to register my car in 2017. Did I forget to tell you that part?
No, you didn't. That's when he said he bought it.
Yeah, he was able to register the car in February of 2017. And I tell myself, you know, I was telling myself, and I can't think about it, but I was telling myself, you know, if he bought the car and he went to go register it in February, they would have told him the car was stolen. If they would have told him the car was stolen, I might have gotten my car back in February 2017, mm-hmm. and I would have been able to tell my dad before he passed away that, hey, Dad, look, I didn't sell the damn car. But damn it, I was not able to tell him that.
Oh.
Yeah, I was not able to tell him that, but yeah, whatever. it is what it is. I got the thing back.
Nice. So, well, yeah. Thank you for your time and talking to me on this. One of the big things I want to do with this project is build a community and hopefully getting the story out there in a more detail than CBS could have. Hopefully we could do something for you.
Sure. You know, I mean, that would be great. You know, I'm willing to work with anybody at mm-hmm. this point, you know, like it's just, I tell you, it's been really fun. I've been talking to a lot of guys, like I've been talking to a lot of people and the community is I feel like I never left.
Mm-hmm.
The parts are different, but I feel like I never left, you know, and the cars are definitely different. Back in my day, you wouldn't see a car show that announced that would say cars like 94 and under.
Yeah.
That's weird to me. Mm-hmm. Back then it was 74 and under. If you had anything that was older than 74, younger than 74, don't bring it. Like, wow, I barely made it with my 69, mm-hmm. you know? And now it's like 94. I'm like, wow, okay, it's different, you know? But yeah, it's definitely interesting. I respect it more. I'm amazed with what these guys are doing with engines today. To swap, like, I'm learning about these guys swapping, like, Hellcat, you know, tops with LS bottoms, and I'm going, what in the hell? I never would have thought that in a million years. I'm excited. I hate saying if I get this car back together. I know I'm going to get this mm-hmm. car back together again, right? There's something. I know there's going to be something out there. There's that's bigger than me. That's just going to be like, I got this guy. You know what I mean? It's exciting to see like what's going to come out of this because my imagination is just, it's not there anymore. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. And I feel like a kid in a candy store and I'm seeing all these new things that is just like, whoa, it's just so cool. And even though there's no racetrack around here, you know, that's how I made friends. You know, I'd go to the racetrack and then just walk up to a guy in his, under his hood and just mm-hmm. go, what do you got? You know, now him and I are best friends, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't know where to go do that today, you know, at the racetrack, but everybody that I have been talking to, pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty cool. And everybody's super, super supportive.
Yeah.
Everybody's been really supportive.
Yeah, because I've only been involved in the LA car community for the past 6 or so years. It started during COVID.
Oh, okay.
And everyone, you can talk to anyone you want. And I'm a shy person.
Are you?
Yeah. And the way I kind of like broke the ice with people, and social media helped a lot, was I took up photography.
Oh,
I would go to like Malibu and I would take pictures of people's cars and edit them up all real nice. And then I would find them on Instagram and tag them in it. And then like suddenly now we have a dialogue.
There you go. That's how you do it. Yeah. That's the way to do it. I'm trying. I'm tagging myself in a bunch of stuff. I'm trying to keep the dialogue going. I'm trying to be, you know, supportive, and I feel naive. That's for sure. I do feel a little strange. I feel stupid. You know, I feel stupid talking about, like I said, sometimes talking about it. I'm excited. I'm just excited. Mm-hmm. There's just so many. I couldn't tell you. My emotions change throughout the whole entire day. Like I get lost And then 10 times a day, somebody comes in every day. So what's going on with the Camaro? What's going on with the Camaro? Because everybody in here has already talked about it once, at least once.
Yeah.
So everybody wants to know the updates. And I'm just like, not yet. Not yet. Not yet. So, yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I really appreciate, like, all you guys, you especially, you know, hitting me up. And, you know, and I was saying, I was telling everybody that I noticed that when you were posting something about me, my followers went up and my GoFundMe would go up. It went up a couple $100. And I was like, hey, all right, somebody's listening. Somebody's doing this. And when I saw that it was you, I was like, oh my gosh, this is cool. This is, I can't believe all these other people are talking about me, you know, like this is really badass. And yeah, you know, that's when I reached out, you know, to thank you, you know, yeah. That's how we caught. And that's just how it's kind of like been, you know, you know, I hope this is like one of many. I hope that there's more. I hope, you know, I hope I get to do more with it. I really wish I can go see some of these shows, you know, like tag along with some people kind of, you know, and like I said, there's just so many, I've been thinking about like calling old friends from high school. There's just so much. It's just so much, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's just like one day at a time. Yeah, so.
It's a new era.
Yeah, it's really new, really new. Yeah. Yep.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Downey Dave's Barbershop, 8032 Stewart and Gray Road, Downey, California. We haven't heard the last from Vic. I'm so glad we could make this connection and hopefully work together to make his 69 Camaro everything he's ever wanted. Because that's what Driveline's about. Community. I want to thank everyone who continuously listens to this show. If you could do me a favor and screenshot and share that you're listening and tag at driveline.show or at justback, J-U-S-T-B-A-C, it would be a big help to grow the show, and I will repost anything you tag me in, with some exceptions. The show costs a lot of money to produce, and we can't make money until we pass 10,000 listens, so the more people we get listening, the longer we can continue with this effort. If you'd like advertising opportunities on the show, email Justin at drivelineshow.com. Or for general monetary support directly to my pocket, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/driveline. 833-335-7469 is open 24/7 toll-free for your messages. That's 833-3DL-SHOW. New show next Thursday as always, except when I lose my voice and the show is very boring. Congrats to Michael Garay on getting the job at WLS you've always deserved. Take care and bye-bye now.